Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Pop Life Podcast today is March 12th.
Definitely May.
March. March 12th. Happy birthday, Marlon Jackson. That's Marlon Jackson's birthday. May 12th, 2022. Sorry, y'all. We haven't taped in a minute. All of us have a lot happening.
Jesus. So much going on.
But good things. No complaints. Yeah, nobody's sick. Nobody's, because we've been through those spaces too, where we were going through heavy periods, and God, these are good things. So this is all good things. We have been, all of us have been going all over, but good things. Nye's going to come on at some point, but she might not.
Busy too.
Yeah, she's busy too. Exactly. So if she does, that will keep pushing. I haven't even asked this actually the last few shows, but like, how y'all doing?
I am incredibly stressed, but it's good stress. A lot of transition happening, so
yeah.
As a family are really excited, and
good. We're excited for you.
The amount of logistics is trying to kill me yeah, and my little ADHD self, but yeah. I'm hanging in there.
No, you're gonna be good. You know what I'm saying? And bro, how you, man?
I'm good. All is well on this end so far.
Good. Yeah, I've been super hectic. I put out I have mentioned before. I have an artist that I've been developing for just probably about 4 years or so to get it right. I'm one of them type of A&R people. Like, I don't like to put nothing out until I feel it's right. And if it takes a little bit of time, then it just takes a little bit of time. But I think I got it right now. And I put a record out on her 2 weeks ago tomorrow.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it's doing extremely well. Getting like, huge amount of spins on Spotify and her subscribers. When she started on Spotify at the Thursday before we put the record out, she had 190 subscribers on Spotify, or followers, I guess, on Spotify. And now she has over 40,000.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, so it's, she's a verified artist on Spotify. Now she got a blue check. And so it's a lot of good things happening. So,
my, how times have changed. I feel like a decade ago, we'd have been talking about how many units we sold.
Yeah, no, we would be. We would be talking about she sold this many records or downloaded this many, songs over. Now it's just streams. So it's a different ball game, but, so far so good. Really, really good. So, y'all pray for me. Go on. This record's called Down. The artist's name is Tyler Royale. Go stream it today, many times over. Featuring Erica Banks many times over, so go streaming, so God bless y'all for the support. But we're gonna jump right into it. I want to start. Wait, did you watch the end of Winning Time?
Of course.
Okay. Yes. You watch Winning Time too, Inka, right?
Yeah.
Okay, sure, okay, yeah. Dope. So the finale was Sunday past 10 episodes. The finale was a little longer, and again, it's not surprising because they kind of cover what happened, which is Magic Johnson's first rookie season. The Lakers won the NBA championship, and he had to step up for Kareem because Kareem had gotten injured in game 5 and in game 6, which was in, they played the Philadelphia 76ers. It was in Philly. Magic.
Dr. J. Step,
yeah, exactly. The dude who played Dr. J looked like he was 63 years old. I didn't know what that was about. That was
no, he is. He is.
Yeah, he is.
Yes. He's got to be, I think his name is James something. I think it's a smooth 54. easy 54.
Although you don't even track it, because in Dr. J was, I think he was like 28 at that time.
And the finest thing in the NBA by far.
You're still young. You're still vital. You know what I'm saying? And this nigga look like Doc's grandfather.
Yeah.
Nigga did not have the range of motion nigga, of a 28-year-old.
Nigga, Doc might scoop your lady up.
Now. Today. Now. Low key. Like, listen, low key. Here. Low key. You be like, you want my ham? Damn. You know what I'm saying?
If that nigga said, excuse me, come here for a second. If you think I ain't walking my ass over there, you don't know me very well.
I'm gonna tell a quick Dr. J story and you know, peace to red alert. I hope this, I don't think it was embarrassing, but I just in case. So I used to work with a guy who was related to Doc. I had never met Doc. So this is back when the music business used to have parties all the time. It was big parties. And so some big party, a Tao, some shit. So we're standing in the upper area and me and Red are talking, right? We're just talking. Cause, you know, I love Red. So when we talk, long time every time I see him. And so I saw Doc. He was like maybe like a two people away. And so my intro to him was the guy I was working with who was related to him. So I walked up to Doc, you know, gave him a pound's hands, the biggest fucking hands. And he said, I say, you know, I work with blah blah blah. You know, he's like, oh, yeah, it's my little nephew, blah, blah, blah. So we started talking and shit. I mean, of course, not surprisingly, he's cool as ice. You know what I'm saying? He's suave as shit. He's chill, like we're talking. I don't know what we're talking about. It wasn't nothing deep, but just like he was engaging. He wasn't just like, oh, good, nice to meet you. Like, he was really engaging. So I called Red over. Because Red, people don't know this, Red, when he was really young, he used to play he was a really good basketball player, but he fucked his knee up as a teenager. And of course, they didn't have medicine like that back then, so he never really recovered. So I called Red over. I said, yo, Red, have you ever met Dr. J? I'm acting like I know this nigga now. Like, yeah. my nigga Julius? You met Dr. J? And he's like, oh, no. And then Red, like, just, you know, turns into, like, literally, like, he's like, turns into, like, a six-year-old. Oh, my God, Dr. J, blah, blah, blah. So Doc, you know, Doc, of course, knows who Red is. And he's like, oh, I remember you, blah, blah. So we talk for a few minutes. And, you know, Doc's like, oh, man, good to meet y'all. And he goes away. Yo, and I turn around, and your Red is literally crying.
Wow.
He was like, you don't know what that man meant to me as a child. You have no idea what you did by introducing me to him. And I was just like, oh, shit, I didn't know. I just thought, you know.
Yeah.
I figured they would have known each other already. Because, I mean, that's from Long Island. I thought he crossed paths at some point. Yeah, but anyway, off the beaten track. So anyway, so winning time. So, yeah, so Magic Johnson is rookie season beat goes play center because Kareem gets hurt. Mm-hmm. Scores 42 points, 15 rebounds, 7 assists, and they win the championship. But the way the Winter Time did it, it was just, you know, very well acted, very well done, because there's all these kind of moving parts, like Jeannie Buss and, you know, Pat Riley and Paul Westhead, and, you know, obviously Jerry Buss, Jerry and all West. These kind of moving parts, and Jerry West. And it was kind of fly how they did all these moving parts that culminated in the championship, you know. But what did y'all think about the finale?
I loved it. I thought it was great. The only thing I didn't necessarily like is that just from the basketball perspective, like, they really made the game solely about Magic. And while it's clearly his greatest, it's one of the greatest performances in NBA history, like, absolutely, based on all of the context, mm-hmm, like, Jamal Wilkes had 37. Mm-hmm. Like Jamal Wilkes also, it was basically him and Jamal carrying that team. Like, Norm had a very bad game.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So when you really kind of go back, it really just kind of showed it as Magic kind of taking control and kind of, you know, running the ship. But I really would have loved to see Jamal get a little more shine during that. But yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of, like you said, there are a lot of moving pieces. And so because it's a mini series, you know, you're trying to kind of squeeze all of these things in there. And so some of the stuff can be a little heavy handed. I mean, we all know that and we understood that from the beginning of the show. But I think that they kind of covered all bases, right? Like, this is the first introduction that we get to the brothers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I found very interesting is that, very much like Donald Trump and Ivanka, like, Genie was who he knew was going to be the one, right? Like he you can tell he recognizes, it's kind of like them intimating that he recognizes that the boys are not it. They don't have that thing that's needed to do this thing. And they kind of a little all over the place. And that was what happened when they took over the family business, which is why it ended up in Jeannie's hands. Because she was the person. But I thought it was really good. I thought it was interesting to see how David Stern played that role in kind of making some changes. And that to me was the beginning of his, you know, his villain origin story, I guess. You know, because he knew it was kind of time to, you know, maybe move on from Kareem and those sort of that big lumbering guy and kind of take it to this young new attraction and how we're going to make this thing work. Because again, and they didn't really dive into it, we know the business end of the Lakers, but that's not the only part. Like, the NBA was still hemorrhaging money.
Yeah, they were delaying the games. They weren't even showing the games. Yeah. They didn't show the championship game live.
Yeah, they were not the league that we came to know in 1980. And so, you know, watching that kind of transition is really kind of dope.
Yeah, yeah. What'd you think, Inga?
I really liked it. I wish the Magic Doc had come out maybe a year before Winning Time showed, because doing it simultaneously kind of, I was looking for differences in the, like, contrasting the real story to Winning Time versus just watching Winning Time. So I wish there had been like more of Cookie's story in the last episode. And I think Wood Harris is definitely getting the Emmy.
Wood murdered it as Spencer Haywood.
Oh, man. My God. Just incredible performance throughout. I think they did a beautiful job of just showing what he went through. And him and Kareem's brotherhood was, like, incredible.
And that wasn't very extreme, right? Like, I believe Spencer Haywood does write a book where he talks about all of that shit. Yeah. And he definitely does talk about hiring someone to kill people. Like,
that really happened. Yeah. I mean, nobody got killed, fortunately, but that really, him hiring some guy really happened. Because he was that coke, he was free-based out. Like, he lost his family. He was married to Iman, the supermodel Iman, and had a daughter, and he lost all that shit because of the drugs was too much, you know? But yeah, they did a great job with it, man.
I found it super interesting that this was the production that broke up the Will Ferrell and what's the guy's name?
Adam McKay.
This particular series was the thing that they didn't agree on.
Yeah, because Will Ferrell wanted to play
Jerry Buss, and he didn't see that for him. And John C. Reilly did an outstanding job of portraying him. So I don't know. I thought that was interesting. But yeah, I loved it.
I don't know. And looking at it now, I think Adam made the right decision. I don't know if, you know, Will's is such a naturally funny guy, and I'm sure he could act, you know, serious. But, like, I just don't know if I could have watched him in some of those, like, darker moments that Dre Buss had, like when his mom died and shit like that. I don't know how Will would have carried that off. I don't know.
I don't think that I would have been able to see anyone but Will Ferrell.
Exactly. Because with John C. Reilly, I feel like I'm looking at Dre Buss.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of forget that's John C. Reilly. You know, he's really got it down pat. I wanted to mention that. Are y'all watching? Well, what y'all watching? Y'all watching anything?
Yes.
What you watching, bro?
I'm watching Bosch Legacy.
What's it called? Bosch Legacy?
It's called Bosch Legacy. So Bosch was a show that ran on Amazon Prime for, I believe, 6 or 7 seasons.
Okay.
It's a very good show. It's about a detective in L.A. And so basically, at the end of the series on Amazon Prime, he basically quits the department and he turns into a private eye. And then Bosch Legacy picks up on him as a private eye and his daughter now becoming a cop.
Okay.
And it's really good. I mean, I would suggest you watch the previous. I mean, you can jump in at this point, but I would suggest watching the previous series just so you have some level of context. But it was, it's done really well. It's on Freevee, which is, it used to be IMDb. Okay. Amazon purchased it. Okay. And now it's called Freevee. And so what they've done is, you know, a lot of these networks, they'll have a free arm and they'll have a streaming arm and a free arm, and they'll try to take hits from their streaming arms and put them on the free arm to kind of move traffic and move the needle. Mm. So I've been watching that. It's got about four episodes. That I'm watching. Tehran has come back, which is one of my favorite shows.
Okay.
It's a little difficult to watch. There's a lot of subtitles.
Mm. I like subtitles stuff though.
It's a spy thriller.
Okay.
So I've been watching that. Apple TV doesn't really do well with their translations, though. Not that their translations aren't accurate, but you know, Netflix does almost like the voiceover.
They don't really
do a good job with that on Apple TV, so they definitely need to step that up.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 Mile Island I watched on Netflix, which is It was very good. It was really, really interesting, man, to see how, the things that we know that are obvious, right? Like how these plants and utility companies are all in bed with regulators and things of that nature, and what happens to whistleblowers and how these things sort of impact these small. It's in Pennsylvania, but it is, I would call that the Midwest, because that's like right
yeah,
on.
Yeah, well, that western part of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that western part of Pennsylvania, right? So it's like, it's really interesting. It's a well-made doc. It follows quite a few characters, and it's interesting. I if you enjoy documentaries and investigative sort of things, I would say to check that out.
Okay. What you watching, Inka? Inka.
My bad.
Oh, okay.
Did we talk about Moon Knight?
No, we haven't. We haven't.
Okay, so I watched all of that. Travis made me watch it.
How'd you like it? Because I'm like three, I guess four and a half in, and I'm kind of struggling.
I'm still confused, even though we watched the whole thing. Sometimes Marvel can go a little bit too supernatural for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this was one of those times. I barely hung on with like Loki. So if you're not like, if you're a casual Marvel watcher like me, don't waste time with Moon Knight. It's I didn't find it compelling. I was just confused the whole time. I'm keep mentioning Wonder Years. You niggas are not watching it and it upsets me.
Was it a new episode this week?
It was a new episode last night.
Oh,
the kids like have a party while the parents are away.
Oh,
phenomenal
shit.
Episode, of course. We are watching Barry. I think we're in like season two.
Barry's fire.
Love that show.
Barry's
Bill
fire.
Hader is killing in that role.
Killing it. Fire.
We are also watching Ozark. We still haven't got to the season or the series finale. I almost don't care what happens to them at the end. Not that it's bad. I mean, Ruth is my favorite character, so I don't know where we go past the first couple episodes of this season. Anybody else watching Ozark?
No, I've checked out a while ago.
Okay. Real Housewives of Atlanta is unwatchable. I'm super behind on OWN things, but I am watching, there's two things I want to mention. First is the First Lady show on Showtime. It's excellent. People are talking about Viola Davis's lips performing in this show, but that is such a tiny part. It's so dope how they're taking the lives of like Eleanor Roosevelt and what's President Carter's wife's name?
Rosalind Carter. No, but you're talking about Betty Ford. Betty Ford, right?
Betty Ford. Well, she's
and like Roosevelt. Roosevelt. I'm sorry, I'm thinking Roosevelt. Eleanor Roosevelt. Excuse me.
Eleanor Roosevelt. Just like taking you through the lives of these first ladies and kind of weaving them into one single cohesive story. I think it's excellent. It's like really, really, really good.
Okay.
Very well done. But I love a period piece anyway. And then the other thing I'm going to mention is what Nye recommended, which was Better Things, that show on FX that Pamela Adlon, that comedian, and Louis C.K. created.
Yeah. Is it good?
Fire. It's one of the best things I've ever watched. And I'm in season five.
Oh, wow. You blessed
it's so good. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to check that out. I've been watching just a ton of basketball, man, because the playoffs is basically every night at this point.
Yeah, sports thing.
And the games have been crazy game. Well, kind of two crazy games yesterday. One was like a massive. Golden State got blown the fuck out. At one point, they were losing by 55 points.
Oh my god!
They got murked by Memphis, and Memphis
was
lost
the team there. What's going on?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. It was 28-29. It was like the regular back and forth, and all of a sudden. It was, I don't know, it's almost like Golden State just quit. Like, they just stopped playing. Like Stephen and barely played the second half. Like, the Memphis just blew them out of the water. And this is what, and they lost Ja Morant. This is not even with their star. And they still just crushed them. So, I've been watching a ton of basketball. I've been watching the OWN stuff. And OWN started a new show. I had told brother, watch, I don't know if you got a chance to, called, I think it was the great soul food. It's a cooking.
Yeah, the cooking.
Yeah, you show. Did tell me. I haven't watched.
Yeah. It was actually really good because OWN's previous cooking show, again, I'm forgetting the title of it, had I think Melba was one of the hosts and a couple other people who weren't chefs. They were just like personalities. Like they had the guy on there. Remember the guy who did the patty pies thing when he was singing the heavyset black guy.
Oh yeah,
he was one of the hosts on the other show. And the people cooking were just people. Like, oh yeah, I make Thanksgiving dinner every year. That was that. This show is actual chefs. These people like own restaurants and shit. Like, yeah, so they're like really cooking. They're not like, you know, they're not fucking around. And now Melba is also a host on this show, along with a couple other chefs, you know, well-known black chefs throughout the country. So these people who are the contestants, like they own restaurants. There's two women own restaurants in Oakland. There's a guy that owns a restaurant in D.C. So like they're like really, really cooking. So I enjoy it just to kind of see, you know, the different processes and how they cooked and stuff. So I thought that was well done. And on the other tip, I haven't really, I guess we talked about Winning Time. And I feel like there's something else I'm watching I'm blanking out on. That's kind of it. In Atlanta. Atlanta's is to me, this has been Atlanta's best season. It's been incredible.
Listen,
me.
It's hard for me to watch because anytime a woman is being emotionally abused in real time in front of a camera, I guess.
I'm talking about Atlanta.
Oh, you're talking about Atlanta.
We can go into Real Housewives of Atlanta because yes, that Drew Ralph stuff is brutal. Like it's very uncomfortable to watch. And again, this is only episode two.
Yeah.
This stuff comes in like episode 8 or 9, like way down the road. It kind of is a build. But the fact that this is only episode two, hey Ivy, it's only episode two and it's already this intense. I'm like, where are we going from here? Because it's already crazy.
I'm curious as to how he thinks this plays on screen. Like, I don't know. I'm baffled. There's no way you're going to tell me that level of gaslighting where he's literally saying what, like that didn't happen.
Yeah.
To her face is crazy to me.
Especially when he said, so the plot line for those having watches, Ralph and Drew like come on having issues, right? And one the main issue so far is Ralph has hired this assistant, air quotes, right, to do stuff with him. And Drew saw in Ralph's phone that this assistant, again, air quotes, offers to like give Ralph a massage because he said his back was hurting, and that he didn't do it. But she was like, yeah, so your back's hurting. You should let me give you a massage, blah, blah, blah. But he's definitely flirting back and forth with her. And then he's telling Drew, like, why are you tripping? Like, so he keeps taking it further and further. And Drew speaks to Candy. And I forget who else was at the house at that time. It was Candy or maybe Sonya.
I think it was Sonya.
Yeah.
Sonya Richards Ross is the newest addition to the cast.
Yeah, yeah, the track star. So, like, the Candy's looking at this thing like, what are you talking about? But why are you even entertaining this type of shit? Like, what did you say? And he's like, you know, he's making all these fake excuses and stuff. So, this episode here, that he decides to take her to this dinner and, you know, try to, you know, make things nice. But she's, you know, still uptight about what happened. So, she wants to just talk about it. She's not coming at his neck, but she wants to talk about it. And he just, like, spazzes. He tells Drew, yeah, you need to go to a therapist and you can learn how to speak to a man.
The levels of manipulation that he is exacting on her is some scary shit. Like, this nigga's a serial killer. Yeah. Clearly that whole, like, roses, limo, I'm gonna get your hair done for dinner and do it on a rooftop was all for the cameras.
Yep.
That he clearly is not a romantic in their everyday lives. And then to get there and then dictate what she's allowed to say to him in this dinner where they're, by the way, eating lobster out of bowls.
that was weird. So bizarre. That was weird.
But also saying, like, I fired the assistant.
But I still talk to her.
Any normal woman, that would mean you cut all ties with her. Like, you don't get to make new female friends when you're married, Ralph. That's not a thing.
Yeah.
So for him to be like, oh, yeah, we still talk. I never said I didn't talk to her. Is like, nigga, of course I assume you're not talking to her no more. This is not your new friend. We have issues that have been coming up in our marriage because of this person. Why would you even continue a friendship with her? Like, and to make Drew feel like she's crazy for she's even saying it, like, I wanted to beat that nigga up. Like,
and then another thing that happened, which was very telling to show how much he is lying. He met up with Aaron Ross. Aaron Ross to play for the Giants, bro. I don't know if you remember him. He was a cornerback for the Giants, number 31.
Yeah.
That's Sonya's husband.
And Todd
at their restaurant Blaze. And right. So he comes in and he's talking to them and he does the nigga shit, which is like basically almost like, yeah, y'all know how it is, man. You know, yeah, she got a fat ass, man.
Tripping.
And they're looking at him like, nigga, you're tripping. I'm like, what are you doing? Because Todd's like, yo, Candy told me about what's going on, man. Like, what are you doing? And Ralph was looking at, kind of talking to them like, yeah, you know, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, you know. And they're looking at him like, they're talking to him like, bro, you're getting no cosigns over here.
If for nothing else,
because I'm on television. I'm not saying these niggas are clean. But I'm saying, but for you to co-sign fuckery on TV, it brings to your house.
Those arguments are now happening in my house because you're fucking wilding.
Exactly.
Nigga, we are not okay. Like, I can never say I'm hanging out with you, my nigga, because that is a fucking super red flag. Because you making it hot on the block.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not funny. Okay. And now when your crib starts to trickle into my crib because we friends, nigga, then we might not be that friendly moving forward.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just the reality. But I actually did see that one particular scene that you guys are talking about where he was talking about the Messiah. And, you know, listen, man, the reality is that whatever that situation is, that shit long extended prior to him
hiring her.
Right? Because a woman is only going to throw that out there to you if she feels like that is that you are open, that you have told her that you are open to this sort of dialogue.
Absolutely.
That sort of dialogue is going to be appropriate, it's going to be tolerated, it'll be laughed off, and it's something that you're probably engaging in. And, you know, listen, I'm not going to say that people don't particularly flirt, right? And that's fine, like, whatever. But I do think that to act like you don't really recognize power dynamics
and
how that can impact you professionally is incredibly reckless. It shows me a level of discernment that is just gone. It tells me that your filter is gone, and it tells me that you have decided that you don't really give a fuck.
And I think that.
When dude did the, I think his heat check was that Florida trip.
Yeah.
And when the Florida trip kind of went off without a hitch, he was like, okay, I got that inch. I need a mile now. And I'm going to just keep pushing and I'm going to see just how much I can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because next, what's going to happen is, I got an apartment downtown.
Because I feel like I'm driving
not coming,
home.
I'm not coming home because of traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it's that's what the next phase of this is. And I don't really know what he does, but what I do know is
not
that,
enough to need an assistant.
What I do know is you're in a major metropolitan city, my nigga. Getting a massage is literally at your fingertips. Okay. You can get any kind of massage in Atlanta you want, nigga. A therapeutic massage, if you want to fuck a rub and tug, nigga.
Yeah, you
want a
happy ending joint.
You know, whatever you need in Atlanta, nigga, is literally two clicks away.
Yeah.
So, shit, whatever you need around here next to a military base is two clicks away.
Two clicks away.
Planned.
Yeah, like, that, it's funny you say that because that's what Todd said. When he said something, like this, Todd was like, yeah, because all the massage therapists in Atlanta were booked. Like, he's like, come on, my nigga.
That's what I'm saying. Like, dude, like, first of all, dude, like, you're in a major sports town. It's nothing for you. You know two athletes. Mm-hmm. Yo, who's your massage therapist? Who do you guys go to?
Exactly. They're,
like, that shit is all, like, that's a huge industry. Like, what are we talking about here, my nigga?
Yeah. And there was also, like, I could feel like Todd, besides except the ship leading to each crib. Because, matter of fact, that scene where they met, that was the first time he met Aaron. So it was also like, damn, like, you kind of like, I just met you and you were like,
come this on.
This
is the just, spicy shit you bringing to lunch, nigga?
Exactly. Like, to lunch, it wasn't even dinner. It was daytime and shit. You know what I'm saying? And then also, it's kind of like, if you do co-sign his fuckery, he'll use that later. Yo, I talked to Todd about it. He said he'd be down there.
That is exactly what he really wants to do is to find allies. And that's the easiest way to heat check. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Because now he's going to throw you niggas under the bus the first chance he gets. Or it's going to be, he was getting a massage and I was with Aaron or I was with Todd. You absolutely was not with me.
Exactly. I don't even know your number, nigga.
Nigga, at all.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's brutal, though. And then, like, the last scene was, you know, he left. He walked off. He broke out. He's like, I'm never doing nothing for you again. I shouldn't have done this shit for you. I'm never doing nothing for you again. And then Drew's sitting there by herself. She's just like down and eating by herself.
Eating her bowl of lobster.
You're looking for her bowl of lobster.
Remember I told you there is a point where you can put on, a lot of people can put on a facade for like that first season with the cameras. And I told you right around that second season, when they get comfortable enough to having those cameras, like the physical people in their space and how those curtains start to come down and you start to see those nigga, this is what made it to edit. You have no idea what might be on that cutting room floor.
That's true, too.
And that's the other reason I'm so scared for Drew, because it's like, she doesn't even, anytime she opens her mouth to talk to him, it's like this timid, like, you know, cowering almost, like, doesn't quite know how to approach him, which is like...
No, but she said it. I always feel like I'm walking on eggshells when I'm talking to you.
That's a horrible way to live. Like, I can't imagine what's going on off camera or... what they're allowed, what topics they're allowed to broach versus not, you know, according to him. So
it's a tough watch. It's a tough watch.
And also, Kenya sucks. I don't like her as a person. Marlo sucks. I don't like her as a person.
Marlo has me conflicted, though, because she does suck. But I do like her, how she interacts and is raising her nephews.
I appreciate that too. Yeah, I do.
So I'm kind of like, but she's really like a nice auntie. But I think
not to like belabor it, but the conversation she had with Candy that was like, you have never invited me over to spend time with your family. And Candy was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, like, we don't get down like that.
Yeah, like we just got cool. And you expect me to now help you be this like great mother? You
inviting them over. She's like, why you don't invite us over to your movie night? And Candy's like, what?
I appreciate Candy keeping it real in that moment too. Like, don't make me feel bad about some shit that you don't do. Either.
Exactly. It's like she was like, bro, you ain't never invited me over to your crib ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, so, her business is weird. I don't know.
It's just weird.
Just hope Sonya is okay.
Okay. Which that's a trip too, because they got 9 people living in a house.
It's what?
9 people. 6 adults. She moved her parents, her sister and her husband, her husband and their 2 kids.
Who is that?
Sonya Richards,
bro. The one track. They moved they moved her parents into the house, her sister and her husband and their 2 kids, and then Sonya and Aaron have a child.
They're fighting over beef patties in the freezer. It's bad.
Let me tell you something, man. There ain't gonna be but one king and one queen in that castle. That's just somebody gonna have to lay down. Somebody gonna have to be, you know, I don't know what to tell you, nigga. It's one big piece of chicken. It's only one.
He's right. But you, and I think a lot of people, so I mean, we were belaboring Real Housewives of Atlanta, but like, so there was a scene where Sonia's mom, they're Jamaican, so they go back and forth to Jamaica a lot to see family. So Sonia's mom went to Jamaica, I think her mother and father went to Jamaica, and she brought back some beef patties, like some authentic beef patties from Jamaica. And so they were talking about them. They had eaten them, and Sonia and her sister were like, they were good, mommy, but they were kind of spicy. I don't know. And the mom's like, literally, she gets really upset. Mm-hmm. You know, she gets really upset. And then they kind of squashed that for a second. And then Sonia asked her sister, how do you like living in Atlanta? And her sister's like, yeah, you know, it's an adjustment. We're still trying to figure it out. We're trying to get used to it. And then the mom says, well, what about how you think we feel living in Atlanta? And so it starts into this whole thing. And the mom like starts crying, like she's really upset. And the sister's like, okay, mommy, all right, we're just talking. But I think what they missed was, which is what Bruh's saying, is not, it wasn't about the patties. It was about the mother not having her own space. You could tell the mother is used to having her own house. And now she's like, I bought these patties. You're criticizing me. I'm in Atlanta. I'm not in my own house. Like, it's kind of like,
right,
like the dynamics are just weird, you know?
Dynamics are weird, but also, and like, nobody was talking to you, mommy.
Yeah, true. But there's still mommy, so she, but that's my point. Mommy is used to everybody talking to her when she's in her house. Like, she runs her shit. So I'm not running my shit now, so my dynamic has shifted. So now I'm like, and her parents are pretty young and spry. They're not old and like they can't live by themselves.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand why everybody lives in that house.
I don't know.
Anyway, let's move on. So I was going to say I've been watching the series Atlanta on FX.
Right. Now, this last episode,
I've been
kind of lost me.
You didn't like this one?
What the hell? What happened?
Wait, this last episode was, oh, the Paperboy episode.
Yeah, where he eats the brownie or whatever.
Yeah, he eats the brownie and goes on a acid trip.
But are we just assuming that that didn't happen in real life? Because that's what I'm assuming.
No.
Girl didn't exist.
No, she didn't exist in real life. What happened was he took the brownie. He had a bad, I don't know what happened. He had a bad trip. Obviously, you saw that was him in the corner. And what I took it as, everything that he was, that we saw was actually like his trip. So like we said, found out Lorraine was in a manifestation of his mom. Liam Neeson was in it because remember a couple episodes back, the dude was like, I'm the white Liam Neeson. So all these kind of little things that have happened to him were like, and his deep subconscious of, he didn't know who owned his masters. And he does feel like Darius is a freeloader and like all these things that are actually really bothering him. But he hasn't been able to say.
I gotcha.
You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, so then he speaks to like his mom, air quotes, who kind of gets at him like, nigga, like, what are you doing?
Like your hat is dumb. You got these people around you.
Around you are shitting on you. Like, you know, I'm your only friend. Remember Lorraine's like, I'm the only one you could trust because that's his mom. So, the ending with Earn, I'm not sure if Earn told the truth.
Why would he lie? I feel like that's an easily verifiable thing about
only because he asked Earn, and Earn was like, huh? And then he asked him again, and Earn kind of paused. He was like,
but I took the pause as Paperboy never listens when Earn is talking to him anyway. So I think it's like something like, nigga, I told you this when we were negotiating this 2 years ago. Like,
I can see that too, you know. And Earn, I'm hoping you're right. I don't want Earn to like have done no funny shit. And I think with showing that Earn, you do need your family, that one person who's really looking out for you since your mom is gone.
Yeah.
He's only got Earn because he don't have no girl, you know what I'm saying? No girlfriend. Right. You know what I'm saying? And Darius is a freeloader, right? So he only has Earn to like, that's really like making sure. Remember, Earn's always like, I left the thing on the bed. I got you something to eat. But he's like doing
right.
You know, so. But I just
taking care of him.
Yeah, I just enjoy the writing the season. It's, you know, they've been doing these kind of standalone episodes, which I've really enjoyed. The standalone episode, the Trinity to the Bone, was amazing.
Shout out to Chet Hanks.
Oh my God, that was such a great episode. I've just really enjoyed the writing. Oh, and the sidebar, because Atlanta, remember they had the series, the episode about the BLM people, right? So what's the woman's name? Patrice something for BLM?
Yeah, Patrice Kohler or something like that.
Yeah, she admitted that $6 million house, they bought it to throw parties and shit. She admitted it the other day. So they were capping the whole time. I mean, it's not shocking, but it's just like, yeah, like admitted, girl, like you jumped out the window, you bought a big $6 million house, and you know, you just have parties and hang out in there. It's not for some BLM business, you know?
Yeah, not surprising. But you know, the unfortunate thing about this is that obviously when people try to call out what is like right in front of us, or, you know, maybe very obvious to us, you know, you're being called everything but a child of God. And, I think the question was always, what was the need for it? Right. Like, mm-hmm. It's still a very infant organization. And, I understand the process of being able to have a space for people to organize and for people to congregate. I think one of the things we forget is that a big part of that that early civil rights movement is that we were able to communicate and have those meetings because we had churches, right? Yep. We had basements.
Yep.
And we had locations that people can go to and have these confidential meetings or have these plans and coordinated protests. And I'm not saying that. So I understand the rationale as to why you might want to have a centrally located space for people to come around from different regions and areas and be able to communicate and have these conversations outside of social media.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think that's a necessary thing. But I don't think a $6 million house, like that's what was just fascinating to me. It's like, you know, you could have gotten like a fucking 12-month lease on an apartment building or like an office space, right?
Yes.
Like, nigga, you could have went to WeWork and got like a 6-month, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Short-term lease. Like, you did not have to jump completely out the window, but, you know. The reality is like, we know this is about moving, gaining assets. This is about having these coffers filled.
Mm-hmm.
They have an abundance of cash and they need to get rid of it. And the best way to get rid of cash is to get assets, which are shit like that. You know, things that'll appreciate in value, and they'll probably blow through cash because they have, I believe they have the 501s. I think they have the nonprofit status. So there are caps to your compensation when you have a 501c3. Like, you just can't arbitrarily pay someone $4 million for shit, right? Like, your staff will be capped, and there's obviously a level of regulation that goes with that. But like most things, there are loopholes, this being one of them.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I was gonna say we'll see what happens, but I don't know if anything's gonna happen.
Nothing's gonna happen. She's gonna say she's afraid for her safety.
Yeah.
And she's going to be able to hide behind some degree and not be held accountable and not have to answer questions and not be held to the fire. And the reality is that they probably dotted all their I's and crossed all their T's.
I'm sure.
There's not a lot of legal aspect to go, which is why when she made the statement that, oh, I don't know much about these tax forms or these sorts of things, it was complete and utter bullshit to me, because when you have that kind of money, you have the ability to hire people who do know.
An accounting firm.
And it is their job to know. You are not operating a fucking $20,000 fund out of a fucking Wells Fargo account.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's some shit you can manage on your own, my nigga. Not 22 million. You definitely don't have the range to do that, nigga. There are people who are heavily and don't have the range.
Exactly. You got to bring in professionals.
Yes. And professionals in that space.
Exactly.
Not oh, I did the books for you know Arnie Earl's Bakery. Word, so I know, word. Nigga, you better leave Jimmy Lee alone.
Word. My cousin just graduated with a college degree.
From.
Oh shit. Did you get to look at any of the Met Gala?
I did. It's been that long since we've
last
been
week.
Here.
Yeah.
I think I forgot everything about that.
It was the Gilded Age theme.
It was gilded glamour. You could be gilded or you could be from the Victorian age. That was kind of the parameters of the theme. Mm-hmm. Nobody decided to follow that, which is fine.
A couple people, but not most people just came with the
I think whenever they add that like parentheses like American fashion at the end of the theme, people just know whatever the fuck they want I think Kim K is ridiculous and a disgrace for getting in that relic of a dress.
But they say now it was a replica. It wasn't the actual dress.
It was stupid. Just wear your own clothes.
I don't believe that. I think they're saying that because of the backlash.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They're saying that because of the backlash. I don't believe that it was a replica. Because if it's a replica, then why did it need it to be like all of those?
Why didn't it fit?
It's the very simple thing. Like, if you made a dress from scratch, why would you make it to not fit? Like, that literally makes zero sense. It's just a way for them to, I mean, it was gaudy. It was really sort of cheap. But also,
she made it look cheap, right? I agree.
Well, I thought it was cheap for the action, not necessarily that she didn't look good in it. I thought she looked fine in it. I thought people, I was like, you know, guys, we've seen this dress. Like, I just thought people were being, there was the part of people who don't like her generally.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And it was like, okay, that's what it is. And then it was like, you know, oh, she shouldn't be doing this, which I thought was a fair critique. I thought it was a little, you know, gauche. But, you know, this is what she does. Like, this is her job. This is literally her job.
Literally.
So what else you guys are asking? You know, I don't know what you want from her. You got on her. You trashed her for not passing the baby bar 7 times or however many times she took it. You tell her she's dumb. She don't know nothing. She don't know shit from Shinola. When she do the thing that she's good at, you tell her she don't.
Shit on her for that.
You know what I'm saying?
She can win, but she's also not supposed to. So
I mean, and listen, the game is the game, right? This is also part of what it is, and you know they'll be fine.
She'll be all right.
Exactly.
Honorable mention, the incredible marble statue that they made of Pregnant Rihanna. Yeah, I thought it was very cool.
That's right.
I enjoy Meg Thee Stallion as a person, not so much whoever dresses her. I don't know why they couldn't find the right illusion mesh. These are just things sticking out.
What'd you think about Nicki?
She's an idiot, and I don't know why she gets invited to places. What was the other one?
Lizzo?
Shawn Mendes
suit was fire.
The look of the night.
His
honestly.
Suit was fire. That just, suit was fire. And the coat.
I thought for Gilded Age, what I found very interesting was that the men were particularly boring for a period of time that they had so much to draw from.
So
photography had sort of just really come into play. And so you have all of these images and all of these little small details that you could have used that I just felt like a lot of the men missed the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a fan of classic dress. So I'm not like against the tux guy. That's not my thing. But I just feel like there was so much more to do with the Gilded Age.
There was a lot of options.
There were a lot of options.
Could've
there were
so much. Who
did some really, really great things and some really dope things. But like, you know, and also too, you know, you didn't have to stand, you didn't have to only remain true to Americana, right? Like, and then the regions were also very different, right? Like, so there were just so many different avenues. But I also think too, that takes a level of creativity and it takes a level of time. And it takes a level of style and sophistication from the person wearing it.
Mm-hmm.
I think,
sort of, And I think it's very easy it's very easy to take somebody and throw them on Fifth Avenue and get me some fly shit for right now.
Yeah.
But not every stylist can really harken back to that period. They don't really have tailors on deck. You don't really have the pants that are going to fit properly and the proper fabrics, because all of those things matter, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I like Tom. Tom Ford has some fly.
He always looks nice.
He's kind of a given, you know. But he was right. He did the gilded thing, but it was super fly what he did. He had a white tie and tails kind of suit on, but it was hot.
I'm enjoying Kerry Washington right now too. She's finally figured out what to wear to these red carpet things. So
and I saw a picture with her and her husband. I was like, oh shit, he's coming outside a little bit.
Namdi's coming next outside to her.
Yeah. But you see Kerry, like he'll be there, but he's never in the pictures.
Right.
He's actually in the pictures, you know?
What was the other? It was something else I was going to say, but I lost it. Oh, Blake Lively.
Oh, Blake Lively murked it.
Murked.
She murked it. She was definitely the best
but
one.
But she always night. Does.
Yeah, Blake crushed it.
At an event like this where there's no like Rihanna, no Zendaya, no like real carpet stunners, it's going to be kind of boring, but I think she was definitely a highlight.
She did the thing. I'm going to switch gears real quick. I'm going to ask you this question, Inka. What is your, I know what your feelings are, but like give me your thoughts on this Roe v. Wade, this abortion, overturning abortion. Now they're talking about banning condoms. They just taking it to the super extremes. What's your thoughts?
Here are my thoughts. Firstly, I kind of knew this was on the horizon and was going to happen sooner or later. Women of color, marginalized women, poor women have always had difficulty with family planning and birth control as an entity. So this is not a new struggle for us. I think white feminists who keep hearkening back to The Handmaid's Tale as a reference believe that they're all Offred or June, who is the protagonist in that series, and not Serena Joy, who is the one that kind of goes along with all of these puritanical standards. When we know that white women are more likely to be arbiters of their husband's chaos than not.
Yep.
So I want them to stop asking us for solidarity and to do more work to further causes that we've been talking about for a very long time. It sucks that there is a war on women, but there's always been a war on women. I am just not surprised. And it's kind of exhausting to, I don't know, just, it just sucks. It's 360 degrees of suck. It's people telling us to continue to vote when like there's literally a war on our bodies and us being something other than fetus carriers. So
yeah. I mean, this is stemming from, and I've said this for a few years now, you know, white folks knowing that the numbers are shifting, especially here in America. Mm-hmm. And I forget the year, but a year coming up fairly soon, and I think in the 2020 somethings, the trends keep going the way they're going. White people will be for the first time in America, the minority.
I think it's like 2036.
Oh, is it 36?
It's coming up really quickly.
Yeah. So they're the first time they'll be the minority, and they're panicking about that because they're scared of the power shift. So they're now literally like trying to force women to have babies to kind of balance it's literally what it is. They're like,
it's always been difficult for a white woman who is of means to decide to not have children versus forced sterilizations that have been happening to marginalized women and women of color,
forever.
Even without their knowledge forever.
Yeah. Yep. So now they're doing everything they can do. They said they're literally talking about banning condoms in Texas. And they want to make this abortion ban nationwide. It's not because they're trying to make it a nationwide thing because they're scared again of the power shifting. That's really the root of it. I mean, there's definitely obviously it's way more complex than that, but the root of it is that.
Don't get it fucked up. Like, there's already tons of anti-abortion and anti-choice legislation that is on the docket in just about every state. Utah wanting to ban IUDs and, you know, put criminal charges on people that have them. States that are trying to require pregnancy tests before women leave the state.
Well, I didn't know that. Damn.
Shit like that. Connecticut, which we know as a blue state, is has drafted some legislation to make sure that if you come to Connecticut for reproductive services, that they don't have to extradite you or report back to your state that you did this so that you're protected there.
Wow. And there's also I don't remember the rule exactly, the law exactly, and I might correct me if I'm saying it wrong, but there's a kind of like a law where they don't want women obviously to have abortions, but they I forget what it's called. They want to set it up so you can have a baby and just drop it off at the firehouse or drop it off at the police station.
That already exists.
Yeah, but they want to make this like a law, like this like almost like safe spaces. You can have the baby and just drop it here. And
which comes from people who don't know how any of this shit works. People who are trying to save like ectopic pregnancies, like my nigga, everybody dies in that situation. It's frustrating. I'll just calm down. But it just, Roe v. Wade, whether you're anti-choice or not, you should care about this because this will trickle down into so many other things.
Absolutely.
Specifically birth control, specifically your own body and procedures that may or may not save your life. Mm-hmm. It's also very interesting to me that people that are like, I am pro-choice, but only in cases of rape or incest, which is like, so I don't get, my body doesn't belong to me until it's violated.
Yeah, exactly. So something violent happens.
If you don't want an abortion, don't get one, but you don't get a say in whether I can get one.
Yeah. Also, and this is just my theory, don't think that this, like, it's only going to be this. Like, it's going to be, like, I think, you know, there are already rumblings about, you know, possibly reversing, you know, gay marriage and some other LGBT stuff. Like, it's not going to stop here. If they get this off, that it's like, okay, let's do this. Like, and I always say, and I'm not really joking, but people kind of think I'd be tripping, like, I mean, I hope I'm not alive at that point, but I won't be surprised if like some radicals in these MAGAs and who radical dude pops up in another couple of years and tries to say, yo, we need to bring slavery back. I won't be surprised. I'm not saying it's going to actually happen, but if some guy some candidate running in Mississippi says that shit, will you really be shocked? Because they're getting all this other shit off. So let's keep pushing the line. See what happens.
Nothing surprises me. Exactly. I hate to sound like that, but just...
No, it's true.
I think a lot about... Well, I try not to think about the world that I am leaving for my daughter to navigate.
Yeah, it's going to be ugly. It's going to be ugly.
Quite ugly. Anyway, I feel like Sean was going to say something.
Oh, Sean, you going to say something?
Nah, I don't really have much to add. I think you guys covered it all. But, you know, we all kind of see what this is. This is about, you know, having children and, you know, this is... also in line with like CRT and all of those sorts of things and being able to indoctrinate them into that GOP machine. And then, you know, listen, they look up and in 20 years, you got a whole slew of voters. This is all about the gerrymandering and moving districts and all of that shit. This is all, you know, it's all bullshit. It is what it is.
Which is why I say like people kind of think it sounds crazy, but you said the CRT thing, they get that off and do start to like shift the narrative of what really happened until it wasn't really that bad. And then before you know it, somebody says, let's bring slavery back. It wasn't really that bad. And you don't even have people have the historical context of it. It's like, oh yeah, they were just like, they were like friends. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. Like,
it's also important to note that Roe v. Wade has not been overturned.
No.
That this was a leak of a future vote that the Supreme Court may be taking. So if you like still have appointments, if you still require a certain type of care, still get that fucking care.
Yeah, it's still there. It's still there.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention this thing with Young Thug and Gunna. So
nigga's going to jail.
So YSL, YSL, which is the abbreviation for Young Slime Life, is a legend. I'm gonna say a legend to all this. A legend gang run by Young Thug. I've heard like for years that Young Thug was like, he got that name. He has that name for a reason. You know what I'm saying? Like, he really was about that action, you know, but he's obviously very talented musically too, but he really was about that street life. And so, the feds have indicted, 28 people with 56 counts on under RICO statute. So which means they've been watching them for a long time.
State of Georgia. Exactly. Feds have not drawn charges yet.
Yeah, you're right. And I was reading some stuff on Twitter yesterday. A couple of lawyers were talking about it. And one lawyer, this black woman, said the RICO statute in Georgia is more harsh than this federal one. So she was like, but I mean, she didn't say this, but basically she's like, these niggas is fucked. Like, because the Georgia one is brutal. So district attorney for the state, for Fulton County, said that they've attributed 75-80% of all the crime in Fulton County to YSL and their affiliates. So Thug's in jail. He's several charges, murder, blah, blah, blah. They picked up Gunner yesterday, so he's locked up. Along with these 28 other cats, and the DA said there's a lot more coming, so it ain't ending here. This is just the first wave. Somebody leaked, probably the cops, but somebody leaked a piece of paper, and they listed all the gangs and stuff that they're looking at, which include like Little Baby's gang. It's called, I think they're called FPT or something like that, and there's several others that they're looking at. A lot of people throughout Atlanta. To bring this crime wave down, and they're gonna definitely make they're gonna definitely make an example of this YSL kids. Like, these kids, most of these kids ain't coming home. They're gonna do some stretches. They're saying Thug, if they take it to the full extent, Thug's never coming home. Like, it's over for him. It's like life in jail.
Do we think the rap shit is just like a way to launder this money that they're getting from other street shit?
We'll talk offline.
I mean, that's my theory.
No, okay, we'll talk.
All offline. This is allegedly, and I'm totally talking shit. And please don't come find me. I love y'all. Y'all make great music. Sorry.
Yeah, no, we'll talk offline. But my theory behind why they, besides the obvious fact that there's been, like, Thug's baby moms got killed like less than a month ago, I think it was. Like, there's a whole lot of shit going on and murders and whatnot. My theory is Atlanta has, I don't know what happened, what clicked, but it's almost like after all these years, white folks have really discovered Atlanta, and they're going through a heavy gentrification period right now throughout the city. Like, it's just, you know, white folks moving from all different parts of the country to Atlanta. And they have some major businesses that have moved in there very recently. Microsoft has opened up a big space in Atlanta. Google bought a whole building in Midtown. Like, the Google sign's on top of the building now.
That was because of the corporate taxes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Republican governor who basically was like, y'all ain't got to pay shit if you come here, which is why.
Yeah, and there's also this Georgia with on the entertainment side. There's this Georgia, which is why you always see that Georgia peach at the end of all these shows, because if you film in Georgia, you get it automatically, and Brooke can speak to this, I'm sure, because they film in Georgia, you get 30% tax break off top. Which is why there's so Marvel and all those people are filming down there. So you got Marvel there. You've got Google. Amazon is building a massive campus literally as we speak in the city. So my theory is also like, we got to like clean up the streets, because we got all these people coming here, these corporations giving us mad bread. Porsche built a huge plant there. And like we can't have people getting killed and carjacked while they're going to the bowling alley. So that's my theory. They're one of the reasons why they're going extra hard all of a sudden, because they need to clean up the city.
I also feel like if you're going to be doing criminal things, you might want to stay off of socials.
That was other thing the district attorney said. She's like, yeah, we use social media for a lot of our stuff. I don't understand why these niggas, like, do you think the cops don't have Snapchat or TikTok? or Instagram? Like, what the fuck? You think they don't have this?
You holding the money phone. They yeah, like, they hold like, on. I yeah, can see the numbers on them bills, baby.
Yeah, you think the cops are not one of your followers? Like, what are you? I don't know, man. Bro, you got anything to say about this?
Resident legal expert, Sean.
Yeah. God bless. I hope that... I don't know what the situation is for Georgia, so I don't know if they're freezing assets.
Oh, yeah.
But I know that that happens. I believe on a Fed level, a lot of times they'll start to freeze assets and shit like that, mm-hmm. right? Which really hampers your ability to put up a legal defense.
Yep.
So I'm not sure what that's going to be like for them. Obviously, not all 28 people have long bread.
No.
And it is very difficult to expect 28 people to hold the line.
Absolutely.
Not everyone is built for prison. And
I'm not.
and niggas might not tell if they looking at a 3 to 5. You know, nigga might ride that out 18 months. You know, you're 26, 27 years old. You do 18 months, 2 years. You know, you come home at 30 and you a soldier. Mm-hmm. Right, like you revered, you the big homie and all of that shit. But when niggas start getting hit with them 20 to 30 year sentences and you 35, business decisions will be made in the fucking interrogation rooms. You can believe that. It is designed to break people. It is specifically, that is why they give them heavy sentences out. It is designed to fucking make you break. Mm-hmm. And when niggas start telling you, you ain't going to see your little boy until he's a fucking grown man. And when niggas tell you, yeah, nigga, your mama going to die while you in here.
Mm-hmm.
And
your girl going to be fucking other niggas.
Niggas telling you that hard labor is still legal in Georgia. Yeah, and you're not just going to be sitting in a cell.
And here's the other thing, right? Like the little secret about prison is that, yeah, nigga, everybody don't make it home.
That's real.
Some people die.
A lot of people come home in a box.
Some mm-hmm. people die. Mm-hmm. Nigga. So, you know, I do know that it has been very interesting to see the reaction, because there's always a lot of we, you know, there's so much violence going on, and then it's always free to homie. And I'm not sure. I don't know if it's Uchi Wally or One Mike. Right. Like, I don't know what this particular case is. I won't pretend like I'm so in depth. Yeah. A lot of times these sweeps, again, they're designed to bring in people to fold, for people to flip. And so, yeah, they don't expect everyone of those 28 people to, you know, face 20 years. Right. Yeah,
everybody's not going to keep it real.
Yeah. So and that's just a part of the plan. Mm-hmm. But a lot of you niggas are operating on phones, like they can't track your location and they can't subpoena this information and they can't get access to it. Like the days of Gotti, where we got to go into the Ravenite Social Club and run a hardline wire into the light post and do, like, that shit is dead, bro. They will literally tap into your phone from a fucking satellite and you'd be none the wiser.
Yep, and none of these phone companies is going to be all like, that shit. We can't do all that. That and Verizon's all like, well, no problem. Here's his phone number. Tap in.
All that shit, B. So, you know, speaking, I don't know what to tell you.
All this shit. Are y'all watching We Own This City?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah,
oh, my God. How good is that show?
It's really good. It's Dookie's a cop now.
Yeah.
Yo, all my babies from The Wire are good and are in that show. So the poet dude, remember the kid that got his fingers broken that was doing the carjacking?
Yeah.
That's the poet guy that the...
Really?
Investigator saw.
The little kid?
The little kid.
The one he got the beard down. That's him?
That's him. So, like, I think we're going to have a few more Wire cameos.
The one he saw steal the cars.
But like Herc is back, and hopefully we get to see like a few more. But it was so good to see young Daquan. I don't know his real name, but like I was like,
word, because he started talking, and I was like, that sounds familiar. And I kind of looked at him again, and I was like, oh shit, that's fucking Dookie. I did not realize the poet was the kid they stole the cars.
Yeah, man.
Wow.
Very cool.
God bless David Simon for putting, you know, keeping people, you know, working.
Yeah. But excellent show. If you're not watching, what are you doing?
And it's only six episodes, too, so you know.
Yeah, I think we're on episode three or four.
Last thing I want to talk about, because I don't want to do too long a show today, is God mentioned Kevin Sanders. So Kevin
Sanders. I'm gonna let y'all have it. Just because I've never heard this man string together more than one sentence. I decided very early on that clearly this content was not for me, and so I decided very staunchly to not consume any of it. So hopefully his family can bury him, and God bless.
So Kevin Samuels was this, I don't know what even to call him, I guess a YouTuber. He was a YouTuber who would come on YouTube in really like nice suits and stuff like that and shades. And his thing was basically like, he's like the mansplainer. He's like, you know, men are the best. Women ain't shit. Women, you know, need to just do what men say. Listen to what men say. If you've had kids, and you're not married, you have no value to men. You know, you devalue yourself. You want a high level man, but you don't really deserve one because you know you just have a regular job and you might have had a child previous or two now wanting to settle down with somebody. He posed as somebody who was like a relationship expert in giving advice, but he basically just shit on people nonstop. He shit on a few niggas, but it was mostly women. And I listened to Van Lathan's podcast. I'll say something, let you talk about. I listened to Van Lathan's podcast, and he had a very interesting take on it. He said, for people like that, he actually says he talked about his father too. His father died fairly recently too, and his father like left their mom after like 20 something year marriage, and like, you know, was catting out on the streets. And he said when his father died, he was with this woman that they didn't even know. They didn't even know his father was dating this woman. This woman like DM'd Van and was like, yo, I'm with your father, like he died. And he said none of them had ever met the woman. Like when Van's father, I guess, left, he really separated from the family. So it wasn't like a lot of communication anymore. So they didn't really know what he was doing or who he was hanging out with. And he talked about that kind of with Kevin Samuels. He's like, for all that, you know, you kind of built this box, right? And you better be willing to stand in that box, because like same thing with Kevin Samuels. He dies with this woman he just met the night before. Didn't know him from a can of paint, you know, didn't care for him like that. And so he's gone after all that harsh, mean, hateful things he spewed, it came back on him and he died alone.
I will say, what a way to go, allegedly, on Cinco de Mayo with a white Latina after taking Viagra and snorting some coke.
Yeah, and apparently
Cinco de Mayo.
And sucking down some Red Bulls as well.
That nigga was ready to party.
Yeah, the only reason there was any care given to him by this woman is that she happened to be a nurse. Because if she had been any other profession, she wouldn't have known shit. She would just be watching the dude die. Well, she did kind of watch him die anyway, but like she did. There's a 911 call that really, she did try to help, but he was too far gone. But it's an awful way to die. I mean, dying is awful anyway, but just to die, like, you know, having all these people like cheering you on and you telling a woman ain't shit, and you die alone, or you die with this woman you don't even know from a can of paint. You know, nobody that you've built a relationship with and, you know, who really cares for you and you have these, you know, bond with, you just die with some chick you met off fucking IG or something the night before. It's kind of trash to me, you know? What you think, bro?
I was not a fan of his content.
Me either, by the way. I meant to say that, by the way. I didn't like this nigga shit at all.
I know this probably sounds a bit callous, but you know, niggas die every day, B. And so I was not emotionally charged in a way. It was a reminder that this man who on the outside looks seemingly healthy died at 57. And it is a reminder to get your fucking house in order, because you never know when that fucking shoe is going to drop. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure he did not think that was checkout time.
Oh, hell no.
You know what I'm saying? So Yeah, I am not, you know, I hate to sound like that, but I'm a little indifferent. You know, obviously over the last 2 years, we have seen death at a magnitude that many of us have not seen over our lifetime. And so in order for some of us to sort of operate and comprehend and still get through day to day, we've had to become a little bit more calloused about what that death looks like and what that means for us. And again, this isn't someone I know. I don't have a relationship with him or his family. I was not enthralled in his material. I don't have any connection to him emotionally. You know, I do think that, you know, what played out and kind of what has happened has been very interesting, because I think that there is truth and there's rumor. And I think that there is a lot of speculation about his situation, because it's low hanging fruit. And while I'm not interested in dancing on some man's grave, like that doesn't bring me joy.
Same.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't really get all of the, like, I don't get that shit, you know? Yeah. And I do want to say, I understand why people reacted so viscerally to him and his death, because a lot of people did feel personally attacked, and I can understand why. He clearly understood how to harness that rage of Black people, Black women particularly. And he was able to use that shit to gain for his own profit. So, you know, do I think his mom should have found out on social media? You know, unfortunately, ma'am, I don't know what to tell you.
Did that happen?
Yeah, his mom found out on social
media. Well, this is a part of having a public figure in your life, right? Like, this is, you know, your son wasn't, you know, he didn't die at like the Neiman Marcus up the street, right? Yeah, like died, you know, he's a very well-known person. He has almost 2 million followers. People talk about him. You know, he's a very, you know, he ignites people. He gets the people going. So, listen, I do think that there's some level of responsibility. I think that a lot of these blogs can be a little messy and unnecessary. But I also get that they, you know, this is a part of the business that they're in.
It's how they eat.
This is a part of the business that they're in. So at first when I saw the news, I was like, oh, Kevin Samuels in Atlanta. I'm like, nigga, that's not a weird name, right? Like, it's not like a non-Biakwa, some shit.
Yeah, yeah, like Kevin Samuels to work down to the plant.
Yeah, like, okay.
But then the nigga never, like, if somebody was saying Inka's dead, the first thing I'm doing is going live on Instagram and showing you that I'm not.
Like, that's what I knew. I was telling people.
After the fourth hour, I was like, okay, we've reached the, hey, nigga, I'm not dead, period. threshold, right? And so that's when kind of like, okay, now, then you started to get into the messiness of the blogs and how he died, what his financial situation was, and all that things. I don't give a I don't care is my point, right? Yeah, like, I believe he has children. He has a daughter.
Yeah, he has a daughter.
From what I'm seeing, I'm assuming he's 57. I assume she's an adult at this point. I'm pretty sure, you know, burying your parent is a fucking difficult thing.
Yeah,
for anyone,
anybody, whatever. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
you know. So again, this is
spin real quick. The wild thing is, just like you said, we talked about the you know, nobody heard from him. It was just wild. I guess it's a byproduct of social media. It was just wild that so many people really thought it was fake. It was like, I'm like, yo, I kept saying like, well, this is like, it's been going on for several hours now. Like, I don't think it's fake. And they're like, nah, I just think he's doing it, you know, for a whole. I'm like, why would anybody do that? Like, I don't get it. Even with when we talk about Ralph and Drew, I've seen people online say, oh, this is for a storyline. I'm like, this nigga must be Denzel then, because that, because I don't know how you get, like, this is not fake. You can't see this.
That nigga's a sociopath.
People think everything is for a storyline. because no one thinks that anything on television is real, but we so often see their real lives also reflective of the shit that we see on TV. You know what I'm saying? Like, we watch motherfuckers on Twitter constantly have whole other families.
True.
Nigga just get exposed, and that's just a Twitter nigga.
Yeah.
Like yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's like, not everything is a storyline. I know it's very easy for people to think that producers are puppet masters, and all they do is kind of direct you to give this fake story. The reality is that for the most part, and I'm speaking generally here, producers take the stories that are there.
Of course.
They're not telling you that no one says, yo, dude, we want you to go be a shitty husband to your wife on camera.
Yeah.
No one's saying that.
It's going to make shit hot.
It's going to make, yeah, it makes for great TV. Like, I promise you, there's no email that says, hey, man, go be a dickhead to your wife.
Yeah, go how cheat about on you your
also,
wife.
And also, how about you partake in what can be considered sexual harassment? How about we do that as well?
Yeah.
No one's fucking saying that, dude.
I don't get it. Even way back with last year, whatever, when Portia and the whole Simon and Fallon and all that, they're like, oh, this is fake. I'm like, it's not. You think somebody told this dude, yo, leave your wife and go cheat on her with a person on the show? Like, for what are you talking about? And it's just bugged out that people just think everything is some for clout. You know, it's just kind of the same thing was that. Like, everybody, a lot of people really thought that he was just faking. And I'm like, yo, it's been 6 hours. There's no word from him. Like, you don't think, nah, I think he's just chilling. I'm like, what? Yeah.
Ain't that much chill in the world.
That much chill in the world. But on that note, we're going to wrap it up and get up out of here. We all got a lot of shit to do.
Yeah. Shout out to Melissa from Real World New Orleans Homecoming, who is clearing all that white privilege in every episode.
Oh, I haven't watched
the work
it.
You're doing, and I appreciate it.
Now, Melissa, is she the one? Was she like a little Asian girl or something? Yeah. Oh.
She's half Filipino, half black.
Yes, that girl. Oh, she wiping them out,
clearing their ass every week.
Good. I gotta watch. I haven't watched that at all. Okay. Well, on that note, we're going to wrap it up. We'll see y'all next week. Be safe out there.
Bye. We love you, Nye. We miss you.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got 3 ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.